from KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, Bristol Bay sockeye strategically held back from hitting the nets until everyone doubted they'd show up at all. Manakotik says we can annex too, and getting to know our friends, the cannery workers. All coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
There are a lot of adjectives you could use to describe the Bristol Bay salmon run this year. Strange, confusing, perhaps a little maddening. This week, KDLG's Molly Dishner spoke with University of Washington researcher Curry Cunningham, who says it's just another unique season in Bristol Bay.
Do you have a sense of when and how the last few days of Port Muller catches will show up in district?
We have several indications. As you're probably aware, catches between basically the 7th and the 9th remained fairly strong out at Port Muller, which suggests that we should see sustained catches over the next few days. In addition, the genetic samples collected out there between July 7th and 8th showed a higher proportion of both the igigig and woodstocks. Now, this was paired with this sort of secondary push of fish to the igigig and nooshigak districts, and more recently Wood River escapements, which probably represent a combination of both those higher Port Muller index values during that period, as well as the higher representation of those two stocks.
We've had a couple of days of 2+ million catches baywide lately. Is this later than usual? Does it indicate that the whole run is late, or what can you say about timing right now?
Well, certainly this large increase in catch and escapement beginning on July 8th that led to the last 6 days of greater than 2.5 million sockeye has rapidly propelled us back into the range of cumulative catch and escapement that we would expect for a run that's in the range of 35 to 45 million fish. With that being said, as you look at run timing on a district-by-district level, we see that some districts appear to be a bit earlier, particularly Ugashik appears on the earlier side, while the other districts do appear to be on the later side. I'm guessing at the end of the season, although it's a little difficult to tell now, we're probably going to see Bristol Bay as a whole being one of the later runs on record for 2015.
Can you put the size so far and the timing so far into a historical context for us?
Well, certainly when we compare where we would expect to be at this point in the season with what we've observed in terms of cumulative catch and escapement thus far, for the Nooshigak, Igigik, and Naknek-Cuijak districts in particular, we do see that we're substantially later than where we would expect to be at this point in the season. This does tend to shift bay-wide, or our perception of bay-wide run timing, a bit later. And I would imagine this is going to end up being one of the later runs on record. I think the most interesting thing about this year is not just the run timing, but the fact that we have seen such a sharp increase into 2.5 million fish days this late in the season. Usually for Bristol Bay as a whole, depending on how you look at travel time between the districts and the towers, you expect a sort of a peak or a mean date for Bristol Bay as a whole to be somewhere in the range of July 4th to July 6th. This year, we're going to be substantially later than that.
Do you have any ideas as to why the run has played out the way it has so far?
That's a very interesting question. Over the years, we've put a lot of effort into trying to come up with ways to better predict run timing before the beginning of the season. Obviously, all of the indices we use to estimate run size in season are very sensitive to deviations from what could be considered average run timing. We've looked at things like sea surface temperature, nearshore conditions, and while there's some correlations there, none of them have proven effective enough to allow us to say whether the run is going to be 1 or 2 days earlier, 1 or 2 days late prior to the beginning of the season.
Do you, or FRI, I guess, have a new estimate of what the total run is going to end up being at the end of the season?
Certainly when we look at catch and escapement or predictions based on catch and escapement in general, we, with the rapid increase in over the last 6 days, we're much more likely to see a run in the range of 40 million fish than we are to see a run in the low 30s.
Then finally, you've been watching the run all season. How would you sum it up?
Every year is different in Bristol Bay. Every year is somewhat unique. The run is either larger or smaller than you expect. It's earlier or later. It's more compressed or has a more protracted arrival distribution. this year in particular, the combination of a large preseason forecast paired with substantially later arrivals and this large push of fish certainly makes it a unique year in my mind.
Sounds good. Thank you so much, Curry.
Yeah, no problem.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you by Commercial Fishermen for Bristol Bay, permit holders and fishing groups standing together to protect and enhance the renewable fishing jobs and businesses of the Bristol Bay region.
In response to the City of Dillingham's annexation and fish tax plans, the City of Manicotick is moving ahead with its own annexation plan, targeting the Agushik section of the Nishigaak Commercial Fishing District. KDLG's Dave Benninger has more.
Manicotick has been opposed to the City of Dillingham's plan to annex the Nishigaak District, which has in the past resulted in the collection of a 2.5% raw fish tax levied on all district catch. Melvin Andrew is Manicotick's mayor.
Last year, we made a plan to try and see if we can oppose the Dillingham annexation. And we looked for different options. And one of the options was to file our own annexation petition because the Agushik section of the Nishigaak district is mostly with Manicotick submitters.
Of course, he says others fish in that district too, and as the fishing lines are drawn, the Agushik section is much a part of the drift boat fishery of the Nishigaak district. Manicotick is proposing collecting a 2% tax on all the commercial harvest within those waters.
In order to get some sort of a income to provide services to the Agushik section, there has to be some sort of income or tax base to provide services.
Andrew says Manicotick already provides some services to the section, including gasoline and some groceries. In its draft annexation plan, the city says within a year or two of collecting the 2% tax, it aims to develop a potable water source, create a solid waste facility, and install ice-making equipment at Agushik Beach. Beyond that, the city envisions a boat haul-out and storage area for skiffs and improving the current boat landing on the Weary River. Andrew says Manicotick is finding out, like Dillingham did, that proposing annexation can turn into a lengthy process that can leave a city at odds with its neighbors.
It'll be approximately a year before any outcome is developed, either a pro or a con, but we're hopefully we'll get a consensus with the City of Dillingham on the annexation part of the bay.
The City of Dillingham has thus far not relinquished its own claim to annexing the Agushik section along with the rest of the Nishigaak district. Dillingham's petition to do so, after having been overturned in the spring of 2014, is currently advancing through the Local Boundary Commission process. Manicotick has opted to use the legislative review method for its annexation, which is the same Dillingham is using for its Round 2 attempt. Manicotick City Council adopted the draft petition at its June 4th meeting, and the city is taking public comment from now through mid-October. In Dillingham, I'm Dave Benninger.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is supported, in part, by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Every year, hundreds of people come to Alaska from all over the world for a summer job, many to work in canneries where millions of tons of salmon and other seafood are packed up and sent to far-flung places on the planet. The processing plants are a crucial part of the industry which drives Alaska's economy, but what about the people who can the fish? What are their stories? This summer, KFSK in Petersburg is presenting a few of those stories of the people who work those long, hard hours on the slime line. Today we meet Andrea O'Neill. She's a 38-year-old Cordon Bleu trained chef from Sacramento. She sat down and talked with KFSK's Joe Sykes about food, fresh fish, and her father. First, she explained why she wound up in Petersburg.
I'm the owner of a private chef and a catering company, and I got into a car accident, and so I'm here to purchase another vehicle, the money for that, as well as to get a catering truck.
Tell me a bit about your life as a chef and your catering business.
Before this, I had the business with my husband, and he did all the finances. And one day he just decided that he wanted to do something different, and I didn't want to go along. And he kind of just about shut my business down. I have a daughter who's 26, just was graduating from college, so we were paying her way through college. And he decided that he was just going to pretty much take all the money and go.
Is this a place you ever thought you'd end up in?
No, I never thought I'd end up in Alaska. Never even heard the name Petersburg, Alaska. I think of bears. I think of wolves. When I called one time, somebody said, oh, we still have icebergs in the bay. I was like, are you kidding me? You have icebergs? I've never seen an iceberg in my entire life. But I saw one when I first got here. Never in a million years would I have thought that I would see anything like that.
Tell me a bit about your day-to-day, your work. What are you doing there?
This morning, got up, got on my rubber jacket, my rubber boots, and my rubber pants. And I think that stuff weighs about a good 30 pounds. After the fish have come off the ship, they've been processed. Somebody else has cut the fins off of them. And then it comes down to me, and I pull out all those nasty pin bones that usually stick you in your mouth when you're trying to enjoy a good piece of fish.
So what's it like being here where you're bringing the salmon in and it's not like you're able to cook it and eat it? It's like you're packaging it and putting it into a can. That must be quite strange for a chef, I imagine.
It's very strange for me to see all the salmon coming in and thinking about all the things that I've cooked with salmon before. I would be putting a spicy Thai sauce on that fish, or just some, maybe some fresh lemon and some dill on that. So it's funny to look at the fish and be, that's a good looking piece of fish.
So what do you remember from growing up? What kind of food did you grow up with, and what are your food memories?
We show our love through our food. My father told me years ago that I should start cooking, and I just didn't think I could make any money out of it. I should have listened a long time ago because that was my love. My father was the rock in our household. Amazing man. My parents were married 38 years before my dad passed away. That was the saddest day of my life, I think. He just took a lot of time. When my youngest daughter was born, I think a year after she was 1 or 2 years old, he retired so that he would have time to spend with her. He was fun. He got excited about life. We showed dogs. That's uncommon for African-American people to show dogs. We had giant schnauzers, just everything that was uncommon to us. He wanted us to experience it. Just an amazing man. But he left a great legacy. Underneath my chef jacket, I wear my dad's old T-shirts. He used to always say when I was cooking, he said, if you decide you really want to cook, you're really going to knock him in the mouth with flavor is what he meant. But he would just say knock him in the mouth, and I knew that's what he meant. And so I go into the bathroom. I take off my cooking jacket and put on my actual service jacket. And I have on his T-shirt underneath. And I just tell myself, go out there, have fun, knock him in the mouth. You're John O'Neill's kid.
That was Andrea O'Neill talking with KFSK's Jo Sykes about her summer working the slime line in Petersburg.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
And that's all for this week's Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KDLG's Molly Dishner and Dave Benninger in Dillingham, and KFSK's Jo Sykes in Petersburg. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.